Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalary Podcast. Hey, I'm Steve. He's Larry. Look, I'm not going to make the joke I made last time, but we're both on screen if you're watching the video version. And if you're not watching the video version, you can't see us, but you're missing something quite special right now. I just want you to know that. Larry, good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, Stephen.
And remember, folks, he's not just Larry. He's Dr. Lawrence Van Beek, for crying out loud. He didn't get those titles by just looking pretty, even though he's a very beautiful man. He worked for those dang titles. I, on the other hand, just get to be the co-host here because I know how to click buttons. But hey, Larry, this week we're talking about Revelation 13. So give us a little introduction on Revelation 13 and why this is an important chapter.
Okay. I do have an earned doctorate, Stephen.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, it's not honorary like some other people. Yours is useful.
I would like an honorary doctor.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Yeah. From a prestigious
doctor. Yeah.
Which was a Thompson Twins song too. But anyway.
Were they English?
Yes. I believe so. Yeah. And there were three people in the Thompson Twins, which is the most weird thing about that whole scenario.
So today we're going to talk about Revelation 13. We're going to go through Revelation 13, but we are talking about the mark of the beast. And I think somewhere along the way I may have said, but if I hadn't, I'll say it again. If you're anybody worth their salt in the study of the book of Revelation has to handle two or three things very well. They have to handle the idea of a millennium very well. They have to handle the rapture very well. Whether you see one or not, you have to know what's going on. And you've got to be able to handle the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast has been super important in popular theology in North America for a very long time. Mm. And everybody deals with it in one way or another, but everybody has to be able to deal with it. And that's what we're going to do today. Today we are talking about the mark of the beast. And we'll talk a little bit. We're going to go back into time a bit, not a long ways, but just a little bit in my own history, to talk about different views of the beast in our own history. And then we also, of course, have to throw in the name Antichrist. And that way I can say that doesn't appear in Revelation. Now, that the name doesn't appear in Revelation isn't always that important. Just like the word rapture does not appear in Scripture. The concept could be there, right? And we'll talk about that when we get that far along. So, Stephen, I'm going to let you read, and then we're going to talk.
Sorry, your volume's great today, by the way.
Okay, good.
And sorry, I had to cough there, and I didn't think I would cough into the podcast.
Well, it's better than you were yawning last time.
Yeah.
And you were yawning. It's really bad when your co-host falls asleep in the midst of your
discussion. My hands were cold, honest. Okay. Anyway, so folks, again, Revelation 13, read now the ESV, and I'll read probably verses 1, maybe end up around verse 10, depends where Larry stops me, so bear with me. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea, with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns, and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's, its mouth was like a lion's mouth, and to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. One of his heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but this mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" And the beast was given a mouth, uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. And it opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. It was also allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And authority was given over every tribe and people and language and nation. And all who dwell on the earth will worship it. And everyone whose name who has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of the life of the Lamb who was slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the word, with the sword, he must be slain. Here is the call for endurance. Here is a call Here's a call for the endurance of the faith of the saints.
Okay, Stephen. Man, that's kind of a lot, eh?
Tis.
It is. But let's see what we can do with it. So, what we're coming to now is there's a beast, right? There's a beast on the shore. So, and what you have in this section is you're going to have two beasts. You're going to have the beast of the sea is the first beast, and then the beast of the land is the second beast, and then there's the dragon. So we have, I think we mentioned in the last lecture, we have this unholy trinity of these three, right? The dragon is always Satan. That always works out. And the two beasts are going to be something different. Now, when we talk about the beasts, this is getting the whole idea of this mark of the beast. When we talk about these beasts, futurists see somebody coming to rule the world, future to wherever they happen to have written, right? So if they're writing right now, they'll say, you know, there is someone coming, and that person is going to rule the world. They're going to be controlled by Satan, and they're going to be the ruler. Okay, so when we're looking at these beasts, people then, for a long time, they really liked the idea because people felt that this was the papacy, that they pointed to the Catholic Church when they talked about these beasts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so then they felt that the beast was going to come out of the Catholic Church. But okay. This beast is really political, right? and so therefore then, if it's going to be someone, I'm sorry, I'm chuckling sometimes, but it's all very serious to people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's going to be, and when this person rises up, then I will stop laughing for sure. but then they would often point to someone coming out of Italy.
Okay.
Because that always worked very well with the whole idea of the Catholic Church.
Right.
Or somewhere in Europe is the way that they had this beast rise up. Now the beast, this first beast then, that they think is going to be some future leader, it varies a great deal, because for quite a while, and I'm going to go all over the place with this and probably not help us at all.
No, that's fine.
But is that okay?
Yeah.
But, back in the 90s, the 1990s, there was a thought that this beast was, and actually in the 80s too, that this beast was the United States.
Oh.
And people from other countries that were looking at the book of Revelation and talking about the conquering beast. And we'll see this again, you know, when it comes to commerce and the importance of commerce. But they would look at the United States and say, well, the beast is the United States. Or the beast is the president of the United States. And they would kind of look at it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in the 90s saying, I really felt this in the 1990s. I thought, the whole world can rise up against the United States and lose. Now, I don't think that anymore. It you know, in the last 20 years, things have changed a lot,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
China has really, there's been a huge resurgence of the power of China. And when you talk to people, you know, about banking and all that and where the money is owed to, it sounds like financially, you know, China is a very, very strong world power now.
Mm-hmm.
And so things have changed a great deal, right? And so there was all this idea of where the beast came from. You know, could it be United States? Could it be the president of the United States? Could it be somebody out of Europe? One of my friends, not you, but one of my other friends who will remain nameless, I remember he worked in the computer industry, which you do as well.
Hang on. It is me. You're just...
It is you. It is you. I just didn't want to say it. No, it wasn't you. He actually felt that the beast, or the Antichrist, as he called it, was going to come through technology.
Mm.
And over time, you know, these things have continued to be a possibility.
Yep.
Now, this beast in the book of Revelation, you'll find the beast standing on the shore with the 10 horns and the 7 heads. And some people tie those 10 horns and 7 heads. Remember, Satan had, the dragon had the 10 horns as well, right? He had the heads and the horns as well. Well, this beast is a very close imitation of Satan in his horns and the power of the horns and the political authority of the heads. And some will tie those heads very directly to countries. Hmm. You know, the 10 nations of the Commonwealth, they said at one time before the Commonwealth changed. And so they're looking for direct relationships.
Yeah.
Now, most of us will say you're messing with it when you're shooting for direct relationships, right?
Right.
So when you look at this first beast, he resembles a leopard or a panther, some would say.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the feet like a bear and a mouth like a lion. And they thought that what this was the leopard. And oddly enough, these are all part of the same beast. And they take you back to Daniel, and they'll say the lion in Daniel was Medo-Persia, right? Okay. The bear was Babylon, right? And the leopard was Greece under Alexander the Great. Right? Which is, you know, so, and that's kind of the way they looked at it from Daniel. And in Daniel, that could very well be true, right?
Right.
In the Daniel stuff, that's probably right. But here, what I think he's doing, and what most of us say he's doing, is he's pulling together these incredibly powerful images, right? Mm. Now, some, and he's using symbolism, right? It's totally symbolic.
Well, I was going to say, was he trying to tie this vision back to Daniel just to give them a frame of reference, that kind of thing?
Well, I would say yes. I would say, you know, you're talking to an audience that probably gets this stuff, right, and talks about it. And therefore they would understand the imagery. I don't know that you need to make the direct relationship between the bear and Babylon and the lion and Medo-Persia and stuff like that. You just need to know, you just need to understand the political power,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, I want to go somewhere else, but I better keep going on this one trend here. When you do that, all of a sudden I become very preterist, because I say, I look at this and I go, well, what was the political power that John was dealing with that would fit this very perfectly was the Roman Emperor.
Yeah.
That this beast was Rome, right? That the beast of the sea was the Rome and the Roman Emperor. And these blasphemies against God, of course, was the idea that the Roman Emperor was treated as a god.
Right.
Some didn't demand it, and some did. And when we put John at the time of Domitian rather than the time of Nero, and I've heard that Domitian would demand it, and some other ones would say, no, Domitian's time was actually a lot gentler. And I don't know which of those things is true, but I do know that Rome held the power, and the idea of worshiping the emperor wasn't uncommon.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? As a matter of fact, people would go, you know, oh, Domitian, I love you, I love you, and then they would go about their business. And John was saying, as Christians, we can't do that. And others would say, well, everybody knows he's not a god. Like, we're just doing this because this is what this is our way of saying, we're not going to mess with you, Romans. Like we understand you're powerful. We're verbally expressing your power. And John's saying, no, you can't. You know that God is God, and you can't put anybody else in that place. And maybe it's for weaker Christians that he says it, you know, because some people will believe this nonsense.
Right.
Or maybe he just says, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We couldn't now say those kind of things about Trudeau, because John would say, no, you just can't, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Our shirtless prime minister should.
Vladimir Putin, shirtless as well.
And all of those guys. Oh, that's an interesting thing, too, because the guys who talked about the bear, of course, they put it to modern times right away.
Right. And
you remember who the bear was?
Yeah, yeah. It's Russia, right? You know, and that's,
yeah, the bear was Russia. The bear was Russia. United States was Uncle Sam. Canada was a beaver. So, which is, yeah, you know, a little bit unfortunate, but
yeah, let us slap you with our tails.
and they look at this and they say, this has the satirical aspect of some of the stuff that we would write. Like if you saw Uncle Sam with his you know, foot on a beaver, you know that that's United States oppressing Canada, and the beaver's got a piece of wood in his mouth, you know it's something to do with the softwood lumber. And we would read that, we'd get that. Our children might not, but we would.
Yeah.
And they would read this, and they would get it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So though this beast could be any leader in the future, right, I still think that, I think two things. Number one, I think he does have the Roman, don't fall asleep on me, Stephen.
I'm going to fall asleep on you. I'm like, okay.
He says, he's thinking the Roman emperor, I think, when he's talking about this.
Yeah.
And of course, there's something far more important.
Yeah.
This is mankind. This is political powers that are opposing God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in John's day, it's the Roman emperor, right? In Napoleon's day, it's Napoleon.
Yeah.
In Hitler's day, it's Hitler.
Right, right.
In our day, we're not really sure, you know. But there is a political power that is in opposition to the true and living God.
Yeah, I think that's the best point of all of that, really, right? Is, you know, we want to drag it into our time, but John is writing it from his perspective on what he is seeing before him to a people that see the same thing before them, right? It makes sense so that they look at Rome, so.
Yeah, and that's sort of the way I see it, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you read a little bit further, you get one of the heads of the beast seemed to have a fatal wound.
Yeah.
But the wound had been healed, and the whole world was astonished and followed the beast. Men worshiped the dragon because of the authority of the beast. And they also worshiped the beast, saying, well, who can be like this beast to make war against him?
Yeah.
Again, was that not United States in the 1990s?
Right.
Was that not Rome in the first century?
Yeah.
You know, was it not possibly Germany in the 1930s?
Yeah,
you know?
Or Great Britain even around the turn of the century, right? I mean, there would be another one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like our friend who says, you know, the sun never sets on the empire.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I don't know if that's true anymore.
Yeah, I don't know either, yes.
I don't know either. I don't know what little bits of Britain there are, you know, around the world. But they were very powerful, you know, at one point in time. And now this whole idea of the beast having the wound that was healed is kind of neat. Usually, for some reason, people pick on very specific examples of this wound that was healed. Really. And really what I think John is doing there, I read someone else say this and I really liked it. They said it's actually a turn on Jesus' death and resurrection.
Oh.
Jesus was killed and he rose back to life.
Okay.
Yeah. But usually when people nowadays, when they're looking at this, they'll point at specific examples. Like there was a pope. One of the popes was injured and he survived the injury. And I forgot which one it was now. I'll say Pope John because there's probably been about 10 of them. And I might be safe on that one.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was wounded. Yeah. And so they said, well, maybe he's obviously the Antichrist, because there was in evangelical Christianity in the last, 20, 30 years ago. And it goes further back than that, but it's sort of changed now. They don't say it as much, but there was a very strong anti-Catholic feeling that the beast would come out of the Catholic Church.
Right.
And the sea was the sea of humanity. And that's still common to think of the sea as being the sea of humanity.
Right.
And when later on, when he says, come out of her, my people, they said that's coming out of the Catholic Church. And we don't, at least Canadians and the scholars that I read, they don't talk about this anymore. When I pulled it up, I Googled it before our lesson here. Lesson, talk, podcast. Wow. I Googled it before we met. And they went right to the papacy. And I thought, oh, I'd forgotten about that. And I should never have forgotten about it. But that was a very strong feeling for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think I've even heard that recently in talking with some other folks, too, that, you know, they've made that equation between the Antichrist and the papacy, which was like, whoa, right, I forgot we were going down this road.
Yeah, yeah. And And, you know, even Pentecostals were fairly anti-Catholic for a long time. Now there's all kinds of Pentecostal Catholic dialogue and all of that stuff going on. So the world has changed a bit.
Yeah.
Now, the other one they mentioned too with this with the idea of the wound that was healed was Ronald Reagan. You remember when Ronald Reagan was president?
Yeah, shot by John Hinckley.
Huh? Yeah.
Shot by John Hinckley.
Yeah, and I didn't know that, but funny name. But he was shot and he came back, and so they thought, oh well, maybe Ronald Reagan is the beast. Right. I said Antichrist there.
Yeah,
and,
that's okay.
And I'll hit that again a little bit later. And so there was this feeling, you know, could he have been the beast?
Right.
Now, in the case of the Roman Emperor, it fits pretty well. In the case of presidents of the United States, didn't fit as well. In the case of the popes, doesn't fit as well unless you want it to.
Yeah.
But there is still the feeling amongst many evangelical Christians around the world that there is a one world leader that's still coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they even said that of the new guy in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, can't believe I forgot his name. Donald Trump.
Mr. Trump.
Yeah. Some said, well, Donald Trump is the Antichrist. And whenever that happens, it's easy for us to then point out, you got to remember that this beast is being followed by everybody.
Mm.
They love the beast. Who can war against the beast? You know, right. We're going to follow the beast. And that hasn't happened with any of the American presidents.
Right.
Or Canadian prime ministers, if we want to.
Yeah, that's right.
If we want to give them a shout out there, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even though, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not you. Even though you're trying hard, it's not you.
you might want it to be. I also noticed that nobody ever says that a woman's going to be the beast. And I just think that's unfair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there should be equal opportunity beasts.
Well, I think so. I think, you know, it could very easily be a female beast.
Yeah.
So the beast was given a mouth to utter proud words of blasphemy to exercise his authority for 42 months. He opened his mouth to blaspheme God and slander his name. He was given power to war against the saints, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to conquer them. And what else are we going to do here? And he was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation.
Yep.
Right? All the inhabitants of the earth worship the beast. All those whose names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Yep. From the creation, slain from the creation of the world. And go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, so right away it tells us that this is a limited period of time, right? Because I did pick this up from the last two. Is that whenever we have that, there's that 3.5 years again, right? 42 months.
Yes. Yeah. And very limited when Rome sacked Jerusalem, right? There was that idea there too. And it was limited there. And the guy who actually, if we're talking about this wound, you know, and the person being healed, Nero, there was a an idea that Nero came back to life.
Hmm.
And some said that some of the later Roman emperors there was a Redivivus myth that Nero would come back to life. And, hmm. and they saw this in other Roman emperors. Oh man, this is Nero come back to life.
Hmm.
You know, it's going to be as bad as it was with crazy Nero.
Yeah.
You know? And honestly, whenever there's been somebody really evil, there's been people have struggled to consider them dead.
Mm.
You know? So Nero came back to life. Do you remember Hitler? Hitler, there was all kinds of ideas that he never really died.
Right.
You know, that and there was, you know, the rewriting of history saying that he was still alive. Now he'd be dead now anyway, probably.
Right.
But there was that feeling that he was living in South America, you know, living in Brazil or something. Which would be really nice, but that the evil was still there, and Hitler didn't die. You know, yeah. They didn't think that Elvis died,
right?
But he wasn't evil.
No.
Yeah. So that doesn't work. Men in Black, as you recall, I mean, he didn't die; he just went home.
Yeah.
but there is this feeling when there's this kind of. When there's this kind of power and this kind of evil exists, that it continues on and it doesn't die.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that they're talking about here. But then he says that this power is going to be specifically against who? The
saints, right?
The saints. Mm. Yeah. He's going to control every tribe, people, language, and nation. This is the unsaved group. This is the non-Christian group.
Yep.
And they're going to fight against the saints. And of course, for me, these saints are Christians.
Right.
There's been no rapture, and these are still the Christians living on the earth.
Okay.
If you see a rapture, then this is an attack against tribulation saints.
Okay.
Right. And even some would say, you know, a saved Israel, a Christian Israel, you know, in the future. But look what he says then. He says, this, he who has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to go into captivity he will go. If anyone is to be killed with the sword he will be killed. So really he says, look, this terrible thing has come upon the earth, and it's going to continue. And if you're going into captivity, it's going to happen now, right? Yeah. Nothing's going to change the things that are going on. If you're going to be killed by the sword, remember the Smyrna church, they went to prison?
Right.
And he says, you're going to prison and you're going to die in prison.
Mm.
It's not going to change for you.
Yeah.
There used to be a commercial. Remember, if you live by the sword, you'll die by the sword.
Yeah. Yeah.
You live in Levi's, it can be denim or cord.
Yeah. Oh, I've forgotten that commercial. Eh?
Yeah, well, it has very little to do with the Book of Revelation.
Yeah, but even the end of it, right? Like, John doesn't give them much hope when he said, here is a call for the endurance and the faith of the saints. It's not like, hey, everything's going to be great. It's, no, just endure this.
Yeah, and doesn't that fit what we've been saying about this book all the way along?
Right.
No. If you're a Christian, you're going to die. Be prepared for that. If you're not part of God's kingdom, then you're going to wish you were dead.
Yeah.
There was a thing in the Book of Thomas, which was Agnus Pud. I can't remember it all in Greek, but it basically said, to be close to the Lord is to be close to the fire. Hmm. But to be far from the Lord is to be far from the kingdom. And John is saying that kind of stuff, right? Not just a purifying of the saints, but there's an actual punishment upon the saints.
Yeah.
And he says it's going to happen. And every time I do this book, I remember that all around the world right now, Christians are suffering and they are dying for their faith.
Mm-hmm.
We're not. You know, the most you have to do is suffer through our podcast, but around the world, Christians really are, they're dying for their faith. Mm-hmm. And he's saying that to the saints.
Yeah.
If Rome is going to kill you, then they're going to kill you.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's kind of the way it comes together there.
Right.
And this one is blaspheming God. This ruler is saying proud things about how great they are, and they're blaspheming God in it.
Yeah.
So so that's that part of it.
Mm. Awesome.
So do you want to try down to 18?
Let's do it. Let's do it. Thanks for that piece there, because it was just, that's very, it's helpful again to be reminded again that John is thinking about this right from the perspective of Rome.
Yeah.
Rather than us constantly trying to drag it to the current day, we're not thinking about what John was trying to write.
So. Right.
Okay, so folks, I'm going to pick it up at verse 11 here. And then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence, and it makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on the earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak, and cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. It also causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both slave and free, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark. That is, the name of the beast, or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one whose understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666.
Well, that was quite a bit again, Steve?
That's okay. That's okay. It all ties together, so we got to read it all together. So.
Well, that's right, yeah. And you got to kind of do it as a piece, you're right. Yeah. So then I saw another beast coming out of the earth. So this is the beast of the land, right? And he had two horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. So he resembles the lamb, right? Because he had two horns like the lamb, and the lamb is Jesus. So he resembles the lamb, but his words are the words of the dragon, right? So this is the false prophet that everybody talks about.
Okay.
He exercised all the authority of the first beast and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast. And of course, in Roman times, there was the Roman priesthood, right? And there was the Roman pantheon, the group of Roman gods, which, if you'll recall, were just exactly the same as the Greek gods. They just gave them different names, right?
Yeah.
So the Greek god was what, Aphrodite or Diana, and the Roman god was Venus.
Okay.
And things like that. So we could do all the other ones. They had Heracles in the Greek, and the Romans had Hercules, and all that kind of stuff. So the Romans had their pantheon of gods. And they actually said of the Christians that they were atheists. They were accused of atheism because, of course, they only served the one God, and they didn't care about all these other wonderful gods that the Romans served. So this priesthood then would be opposed to Christianity.
Right. Okay.
And of course they saw nothing in killing the Christians.
Right.
But then right up till this century, people saw nothing about killing each other for religious reasons.
Right.
Yeah. And that probably will come again. So, if you give people enough room, they'll just keep killing each other.
Yeah.
So he exercised the authority of the first beast. So then he carries the authority of the first beast. So you can see why people that look to the future, a future fulfillment of this, you can see why they saw the church in this thing, right? The head of the church being the first beast, the church and its priesthood being the second beast. Because of the things that had happened through the Catholic Church over the centuries, and they would always point to the Spanish Inquisition. That was the big one, where wasn't there one guy who said, you can give me the most innocent man there is, and, give me 6 months and I'll prove him a heretic, and we'll be able to kill him. And the Catholic Church did kill people. Of course, what they didn't mention in that time is that the Lutheran Church killed people too. And so the other churches did the same kind of stuff. Yeah. And they tortured and killed the Anabaptists, the forerunners to the Mennonites, right? And so we all did it. The Pentecostals never did. But we didn't come around until 1921, so we didn't get our shot at it.
Yeah, and I'm from peace loving evangelical free, which is a Swedish denomination. I mean, we beat people with lutefisk and stuff like that.
Yeah. Which is a fate worse than death. I mean, because fish soaked in lye, there's nothing good about that.
No, there's a reason why only the Scandinavians have that. Yeah.
I didn't know you were Scandinavian.
I'm not. Well, I'm a little bit Norwegian, right? Which actually is where lutefisk is from. It's not the Swedes. The Swedes are all screaming right now. We're not Norwegians.
We're not. We're not.
Yeah, no, we're not.
But you married a Norwegian or a Swede, didn't you?
Part Swede, part Dane.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And they were great, the Danes.
Yes. So, matter of fact, they named dogs after them.
Yes. Wonderful, wonderful dogs.
Matter of fact, they're huge. They're called Great Danes.
he performed miraculous signs, even with fire coming down from heaven. And he ordered an image of the other to be set up, and people had to worship this. So you can see how this really does fit the Roman emperor.
Yeah, Because didn't that happen in the temple in Jerusalem?
Well, that happened there as well. Yeah. Now, that wouldn't have been a Roman thing. That would have been Antiochus Epiphanes. So you're talking about just after the time of Alexander the Great.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That happened. Yeah. Okay. But the Romans, they had this kind of, they had this power over the world. Right. And they did demand that you respect the Roman emperor and sometimes worship the Roman emperor.
Yeah.
And it was really important for everybody to follow through with this. And so when we get down here and we're talking about everybody starts worshiping them, and those that would not worship, right, they're the ones that run into all kinds of trouble. So he forced everyone, great and small, rich and poor, slave and free, to receive a mark on his right hand and on his forehead, so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, which is the beast, the name of the beast or the number of his name. Okay? So, and this has happened all through the centuries as well. But we can point at it in the first century. If you wanted to do commerce, you had to say that you worshiped the Roman emperor, or you had to say that you respected the Roman emperor. You remember in Nero's time, and if we even went back to Babylon, you had to bow down or they would cut your head off, right? The whole idea of worship was you would bow down before, right? That's what worship is, right? And in Romans times, you had to worship the Roman emperor. Well, if you didn't, then you couldn't buy yourself. And they actually said that in Ephesus, they had this thing where you had to receive a mark in order to go into the marketplace and buy and sell. And some people think that's where the idea of the mark came from. Right?
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And through the centuries, of course, you know, in Russia's time, now Russia, you know, they've gone through their time of weakness, you know, and now it sounds like they're building strength again. So, you know, I don't know what the prophecy people are doing with this. But when I was younger, like when I was in my teens, let's say the 1970s, in Russia, if you weren't part of the Communist Party, right, you couldn't get good jobs. So if you were, so Christians in Russia, so we were told anyway, you know, this is maybe all hearsay.
Yeah.
But Christians, because they weren't part of the Communist Party, couldn't get university education and couldn't get good jobs. So if you did not worship the beast, you could not buy or sell, right? In Roman's time, if you did not worship the emperor, you could not buy and sell. In Germany's time, of course, if you weren't part of that, you were hiding away. You couldn't be part of the economic system.
Yeah.
So it could have a very specific, not audience, but it could be pointing to a very specific time and a specific group. But it seems to fit every generation.
Well, I was going to ask, is it kind of like, you know, the future preterist would drag it to today, but is it one of those things that we could, like you just said, we could see this in every generation? You know, it's a multiple fulfilling prophecy.
Yes, yeah. And in that sense, it works really well. You know, like even today, the fuss in Canada right now amongst evangelicals is you're not going to be able to hire a summer student if you don't agree with the party in power's views on things, right? You have to sign off something.
Yes.
And now they're backing away from that. They're saying, no, we're going to let you hire a student. But we were really quite concerned about that.
Yeah, right.
And it went through that evangelical Fellowship of Canada got involved, and they started talking about it quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
So are there possibilities even in Canada? Always. There's always that possibility,
right?
And there's always the issue. Now, the idea of the mark of the beast, even though I see it in that way, people have seen it as being a very literal thing that's going to happen in our future, right? Unless you receive the mark of the beast, you can't buy yourself. And remember, I think at the turn of the millennium, Christians were buying water and food, and you know, and preparing for the millennium. There was also the Y2K computer scare, where everybody was buying generators and things like that.
Yeah. I remember you and I making fun of people like that. Sorry.
We were actually hoping that we could buy a generator once they discussed.
Yes, that's right.
but nobody ever sold their generators afterwards because Honda makes a very good generator.
Yeah, right? Don't they? Really,
yeah, I totally wanted to buy one. But the literal fulfillment then would be an actual mark, right?
Yeah.
A tattoo. Yeah. And in John's time, of course, there was that tattoo to get into the Ephesian market. In our time, they had talked about the possibility of computer chips in your hand and or in your forehead. And 15 years ago, Steve, that was really common for Christians to talk about that stuff. If you go back just a little bit further, when credit cards came out, the Christians were saying, oh, this credit card thing, this is the end. This is the mark of the beast. You're going to not be able to buy or sell without a credit card. And you're going to have to honor the beast, you know. And the idea was if you got a credit card, you know, this was a ticket straight into hell. Mm-hmm. And then of course, the one book that the person was talking about that, their second book you could buy with a credit card. So that didn't quite work out. And it related to the banking system. And even today, I have non-Christian friends that just talk about the horrors of the banking system. Mm. And in some ways, they're probably right.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. They're all kind of conspiracy theorists, which I'm not. But, you know, the conspiracy guys make a point sometimes. it kind of freaks you out. But the whole idea of the mark of the beast then is you're going to get this mark on your forehead or your hand. Now, what I'd like to point out is that the whole idea of something on your forehead and on your right hand, in Judaism, the priests, the Pharisees, and the priests would wear phylacteries.
Right.
And phylacteries were like commandments. They would put commandments in little leather pouches, yeah. And they would wear them on their right hand. Or they would wear them in a thing on their forehead, right? And the real idea behind that was you need to honor God with your thoughts and with your deeds.
So, if we take this in a symbolic way as well.
Yeah. Who are you going to honor? Are you going to honor God with your thoughts and deeds? Or are you going to honor Satan with your thoughts and deeds?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And is there a real part of it that you're not going to be able to buy and sell? There certainly have been times in history where that's happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And as I often said, there was always the scare tactic, right? You're going to get this thing in your head or on your right hand. And, you know, as soon as you get it, you're going to go straight to hell. And, you know, and I always said, you know, if the bank did that thing with your wrist, you know, and we're pretty close to that now with our phones and stuff.
Sure.
But I'd say, well, you know, get it in your left hand, and then maybe that would be okay. But don't, whatever you do, don't get it in your forehead, because when you're shopping at the supermarket and they have to drag your head down over that.
Hey. He's not, this one's not scanning, Joe.
This guy cannot buy because his forehead isn't working properly. And technologically, it can all work out. All of the soothsayers that think that this stuff is going to happen,
yeah,
it all could work. Paul and Peter Lalonde, you know, 25 years ago, talked about these things in your hands.
Right.
And they talked about, you know, scanning sheep and all of that stuff that the farmers could do, and they're going to do that with people. Always a possibility, right?
Sure.
But you remember the Jews in the Jewish people in the Second World War? They had to wear the Star of David to center themselves out.
Yeah.
Right? That doesn't quite fit, but in a way it does, right? It's a centering out of a certain group of people. Mm-hmm. But I really think that what he's doing here is he's saying, who are you going to serve?
Right.
Right? Okay. In this one here, if you're going to be, are you going to serve the beast? Are you going to serve mankind? Or are you going to serve God? Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important. And one thing I should mention is that whenever people talk about this beast, they will use the term Antichrist. Right? And Antichrist can actually mean one of two things. It could mean opposed to Christ, or it can also mean in the Greek, it can mean in place of Christ, right? But the word Antichrist is only used twice in Scripture, and that's in 2 John, 1 John 4, and 2 John, I think, verse 7 or something. And both times in John, he is talking about false prophets in the church. In the letters, right? In the one he says, "You have heard that Antichrist is coming." So there must have been some thought of that, right? Mm-hmm. They must have been thinking about a coming Antichrist, because that's what he says. "You've heard Antichrist is coming. I tell you, they are already here." And he changes their thought on that.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking for a specific person. They're already in our church. They're already causing us trouble.
Yeah. John's pulling it back to right to where they are rather than future.
Well, yeah. They were looking to the future, and John pulls them back, right? And we're looking to the future. Some of us are looking to the future. And I don't know that John would pull you back, but he would at least say, even if there's a very literal fulfillment of this, and there could be, mm-hmm. there's a strong spiritual fulfillment that you have to be aware of. Mm-hmm. And that affects us right now.
Yeah.
And the Christians are going to pay, and they are going to suffer.
Yeah.
I wish he wouldn't keep saying that. I really wish he'd say, you know, I really wish he'd say, you know, there's a big bag of money waiting for each of you, you know, and you know, spend it all at Club Med, but don't be materialistic.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And the grapes are awesome.
Yeah. Try the fish.
Try the fish. Now, Larry, one last thing before we close off on that, but you know, he concludes it with saying this calls for wisdom, and then he makes this reference to this number that people concentrate on so much, the 666. Is there any symbolism in the first century that would make sense of that?
Yeah. In many languages, in ancient languages, numbers and letters, like letters were used for numbers. And we know that from Roman numerals, right?
Right.
Right. And in Hebrew letters, there were numbers associated with letters as well. And the Jewish people through the centuries have done a thing called gematria, where they do a mathematical thing with numbers, you know? And the Greeks did this too. They talk about, don't know if it's true, but in one of the commentaries, he talks about there's a tree, and on the tree it says it has this number, right? And people would put numbers on the trees. Or one place there's something written that said something like somebody in their notebook in school, you know, wrote, "I love her whose number is 545, you know. And I can picture the boys would write that, and then the girls would read it. "Oh, he's talking about me. He loves me." Or the girls write it, if I'm being more careful, and the boy reads it and go, "Oh, she's talking about me. She loves me."
Yeah.
And this was very real. Well, okay. So through the years they've done this, right? And I remember with Reagan, they did a numerology with the R alphabet.
Sure.
And try and see if his number came up to 666, and it didn't, right? Now, interestingly, I don't know the exact number. I can't remember the exact number, but Nero's number, if you played with it, you could make it. It was six something. It was 669, 645. It was something like that. And there's actually one of the copies of Revelation use the number of Nero's name in the text itself.
Oh, rather than 666, they would use 645, let's say, or something like that.
Yeah, I should have read it so that I could have, you know, sounded more intelligent.
No, we're going to go with that. That's
but that's what it was. If you grab a commentary, they'll talk about this number for Nero that they use. Well, they tried that with the Pope, and they tried it with that, and they think that there may be an actual number of a person that will work. The other thing that people often say, of course, is it falls short of God all three times. Six is the number of a man.
Yeah.
Seven is the number of God.
Yeah.
Or of perfection. And right. So this falls short of perfection. Though John does say, "He who has wisdom, And so it seems like his audience knew who this was.
Yeah. Interesting, eh?
Yeah.
This calls for wisdom. Let the one who is understanding calculate the number of the beast.
That's right, yeah. So there you go with that. And so that's the whole thing about the beast. So people think there may be a future fulfillment of this. There may be a ruler, you know, and some would say that ruler is going to make a pact with Israel, and then he's going to break that pact with Israel, you know, and others say, you know, there's just this ruler that the whole world is going to follow. Some point to very specific things even in our day. Lots of people say the Antichrist has already been born and lives amongst us. And I've been reading that since the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, so he's in his 40s now. How old is Trudeau?
In his 40s, strangely enough.
Oddly enough. Yeah. But we just, I still like the spiritual application of this, the symbolic application. Where I think it's not spiritual or symbolic is that the Christians are suffering for their faith. And this is patient endurance on the part of the Christians. Right? And in a very real way, this Antichrist has been with us all along. Is there going to be a future one? Possibly. But there's definitely been Antichrist through the years.
Right.
And Christians have paid the price. And by the way, the Germans, Germany itself had a good church, a confessional church. But Nazi Germany, from what I've been told, had their own kind of a church going. That fits it again. You know.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. But,
yeah, that's what I've got for that.
Yeah. Yeah, and thanks for that last little bit. I'm sorry to interject with that whole 666 thing, but it's something.
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me because I forgot to bring it up, and it's kind of critical.
Well, yeah. I mean, people, I think, concentrate on it, right? You know, the numerology guys let us down all these number studies, and to sometimes to hilarious sort of ends, actually. So thanks for clarifying.
But you know, there was a guy named Grant Jeffries, and he did the Bible code. So he did a thing called equidistant letter sequencing, and he would count up the letters and point at things that were happening in the future through that. And I remember people in our school would mock him, right?
Yeah.
And then I realized, of course, he bought a house in Mississauga with that book, and all that we got was a little bit of mocking out of it.
Yeah. He did a lot better monetarily.
He did. And you know what? I actually knew his sister.
Oh.
And he was a tremendous guy.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He wasn't a devious bad man at all.
Yeah.
Okay. He was just a conspiracy theorist.
Ah, good point.
And just like I have friends now that say, you know, the world is ruled by seven families. They completely believe this. The Illuminati thing.
Yes, or the Rothschilds.
Yeah, the Rothschilds are definitely one of them. And you know, they can convince you of it if you let them talk long enough.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Larry, thanks for pulling us back to reality on this and letting us see what John, you know, again, John has this vision of Rome before him, and he's speaking to an audience that's affected by Rome. So naturally it's all influenced and you know, those thoughts of Rome permeates into the words on the page that we have before us. So makes sense. Folks, thank you so much for joining us. Larry, thanks for your wisdom. Thanks for sharing it with us. Folks, we're just glad that you came along on this journey with us. And hey, next time, believe it or not, we're going to hit Revelation 14. That's how we do this podcast, is we go one chapter at a time. So thanks for joining us. As always, you can find us at apocalary.ca. And, you know, one of these days we'll get up on Google Play or iTunes or something crazy like that. But until then, you can find us there. Thanks so much. And until next time, it's bye from Steve.
Bye from Larry.
Folks, we'll see you. Bye now.